We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In a week where so much has happened, one man stands alone. Poised to tackle it all and take your calls. Armed with just his wit and a stack of stats, he embarks on a quest that will require 4 hours of intense concentration, telephonic communication, and the mockery of jockery. This is The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. I'll get right back to you guys on the line in just a second. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. But first, I have to make my NFL picks of the week, and it's time to do that right now.
He's crunched the numbers, used careful analysis, and is now ready to lay down the dough. Here's Robin Lundberg with his gridiron picks of the week.
First, I need my recap from last week, Anthony. What we got?
All right, so last week you were 4-2, so back over 500 now, 14-12 overall on the year.
14-12 on the season, a rousing success, a resounding success. Let's start with the Falcons plus 4 over the Vikings. No in-depth analysis here, just the post-coach firing bump that tends to happen, and that's not a condemnation on Dan Quinn. I don't think... Dan Quinn is the reason for the Falcons' struggles. I don't think, he's to blame necessarily, for anything, or that they're going to be better as a direct result of him being gone. But it tends to be the case that right after a move like that happens, a team has that immediate bump. Whether it's because players are energized because they didn't like the coach, or just because, like, oh no, something happened. It's like at your workplace when there's a shakeup, something happened. And it can intensify the focus a little bit. We just saw it happen with the Texans. You also get the, scheduling can factor into that. And the Vikings have just not been very good thus far this season either. So I'll take the Falcons plus 4 over the Minnesota Vikings this week. Give me the Bears plus 1 over the Panthers. You know, we had a caller earlier called the Bears the worst 4-1 team or whatever they are. I actually am not overly impressed by the Bears either, having watched that Tampa game pretty closely. But the Panthers are also a team that's probably record is a little bit better than their quality. So I think the Bears with Foles at quarterback are a better team than the Panthers at the moment, and it's just kind of as simple as that. So, there's if this was the Bears against a higher quality opponent, I probably wouldn't be picking them. But the Bears just plus 1, meaning essentially, it's an even matchup. I'll go with Chicago over Carolina. Give me the Patriots minus 8.5 over the Broncos. I think with Cam Newton, the Patriots are a Super Bowl contender. The Patriots are 2-2 on the season, plus 5 so far, and that's throwing in a game where they lost to the Chiefs 26-10 with Brian Hoyer at quarterback. And Brian Hoyer and Jarrett Stidham at quarterback. Their high passing was 130 yards from Hoyer in that game. Not going to cut it. And it was sneakily close. Like, if Cam Newton had been playing in that game, perhaps the Patriots win. Their only loss with Cam Newton in the lineup is to the Seahawks, 35-30. That was a great back-and-forth game. Of course, Newton had a chance to win it on a possible touchdown run late. So I think the Patriots with Cam Newton are very, very good. The Broncos, not so much. Give me the Patriots -8.5 over the Broncos. I'll take the Rams -3 over the 49ers. The Rams had that Super Bowl hangover year last year. They really seem to be rounding back into form this season. Maybe the 49ers are the team experiencing the Super Bowl hangover this year. They've got questions at quarterback. So I think the Rams are right back in the mix as a contending team in the NFC this year. They're sitting at 4-1 in the season. That's a very good division. Every team in that division has a positive point differential right now. The only division that is true for. I think if you look at the best divisions in football, you got to go with the NFC North and the NFC West. But in the AFC North and the NFC West. In the AFC North, you still have the Bengals weighing them down at the bottom with Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cleveland. In the NFC West, there is no weak team. San Francisco is at the bottom right now. So for the Rams to be doing what they're doing is extra impressive there. I like the Rams -3 over the 49ers. Give me the Chiefs -4 over the Bills. This has not been the Chiefs' greatest season thus far this year. They haven't looked quite as dominant as I thought they would look, but I tend to pick with the Chiefs no matter what, and just 4 points. You know, I remember when the Chiefs were getting points against the Ravens, I picked them. And if the Chiefs ever get points again, I don't care who they're playing, I will pick them. And -4 is almost the same as the Chiefs getting points. I mean, how often do the Chiefs win a game and they're not winning by more than 4 points? And how often do the Chiefs lose a game? Not often. Give me those two things together. I'll take the Chiefs -4 over the Bills. And finally, I'll take the Cardinals -1 over the Cowboys. Again, the Cardinals in that NFC West division. Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, I've liked what they've brought to the table together thus far this year. I think, you know, Andy Dalton and the Cowboys have a shot, but thus far this year, I haven't been too impressed with Dallas, especially defensively, and I do think that's a big downgrade at quarterback, losing Dak Prescott and going to Andy Dalton. So I will take the Cardinals -1 over the Cowboys. To recap, that's Falcons +4 over the Vikings, Bears +1 over the Panthers, Patriots -8.5 over the Broncos, Rams -3 over the 49ers, Chiefs -4 over the Bills, and Cardinals -1 over the Cowboys. Usually I pick 5, but I picked 6 last week. It worked out for me at 4-2, so I'll try it again. Press my luck just a little bit. I'm sitting at 14-12 on the season when it comes to NFL picks. Let's go to Jake in St. Louis. Jake, you're up next here on the Robin Lundberg Show on CBS Sports Radio. Let's go.
What's up, man?
How are you?
I enjoy it. Not bad. I really enjoy the show on my way home from work in the mornings. It's awesome. On the LeBron Jordan, what you were talking about earlier, I just think that there's never going to be a clear answer with the debate. I think it's either or, you know, personal preference. I think Jordan was probably the better scorer, but LeBron's definitely the better passer. I think the killer instinct conversation is interesting. I don't think early in his career LeBron had that killer instinct, but early in Jordan's career, Jordan wasn't in those moments. Jordan wasn't, like, making the finals. He was getting kicked out by the bad boy Pistons and such. I think that you can poke more holes in LeBron's resume than you can in Jordan's. I think that LeBron going to 10 finals is incredibly impressive, and he deserves all the credit in the world for that. But I do think that it's fair to say that the level of competition he played in when he was in the Eastern Conference most of the time wasn't, like, overly impressive for him to get through. Like, in 2007, beating the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals and then getting to the finals to get swept by the Spurs.
Here's what I'd say. One, he had to have that, 29 straight points against the Pistons. And if you actually look at the winning percentages of the teams that Jordan faced in the East are remarkably similar to the winning percentages that LeBron faced in the East. I think that the best teams Jordan faced in the East were early in his career. The Celtics and the Bad Boy Pistons, who you just referenced, who actually beat him 3 out of 4 times. But then, you know, that also, you know, LeBron went to the West and he just won in the West. And when you start to take finals opponents into consideration, I love this Miami Heat team, but it's the weakest team probably LeBron has faced in the finals, right? Otherwise, he beat the 73-win Warriors in the finals. He beat KD, Harden, Westbrook, and Ibaka in the finals. He beat Duncan, Kawhi, Parker, and Ginobili in the finals. So I don't really think there's an, you know, I think the competition level they faced, there's not really a, you know, relative to their era, I don't think it's too decisive either way. And when it comes to finals opponents, I think LeBron clearly faced the tougher teams in the finals by a wide margin.
I do agree with what you have to say about the finals opponents. Most definitely the level of basketball is just at a higher level at this point compared to where the era Jordan played in. Players are more skilled. There is more offense, and people would say less defense, but it's tough to guard the way that the players play today with the spacing, with the improved shooting comparative to Jordan's era. But I also think that if you put Jordan in this era, I do think that he would be better offensively than he was.
Well, I think he'd get better at the three-point shot. You know, greatness would find a way, right? And again, that's why I'm like, you have to be very nitpicky and specific in the arguments. I would never discredit Michael Jordan.
Agreed. I don't think that it's just the three-point shot. I actually don't even think that would be the biggest reason that he would get better. I think that his ability to drive in the lane, if he was surrounded by a wider spread of shooters, then that lane is more open. I mean, a la what Houston did with Russell Westbrook this year, getting one of the best offensive seasons he's ever had.
Here's what I would say the other way, though. Like the problem he would face is you could zone him up. What I meant is he'd become a better 3-point shooter than he was.
Definitely.
Jordan
definitely.
Was a below average 3-point shooter.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah. But, yeah. Like, I mean, Michael Jordan, I believe, you know, if you look back when they changed the rules, he said, he literally said from his own mouth he wouldn't have had the same career if the defensive rules that they implemented in, I believe it was 2001, were there for his whole career. Because it actually makes it, you know, like when, for instance, that play where LeBron passed it out to Danny Green, right? You couldn't do that in Michael Jordan's era. To the same extent, you could send the hard double, but you couldn't hedge the way you can now. And then it's also harder to go up against the opposition and beat them, quote unquote, by yourself when they can rain threes on you, when the Splash Brothers are doing what they do. But, you know, to Jordan's
definitely.
Credit, to the Bulls' credit, as a perimeter defensive team, especially with Rodman and Scottie Pippen, they were as good as it got at any time in history.
Agreed. And one more point I wanted to make. I've heard you make this point a couple of times on your show, and I don't necessarily agree with it. You've said when LeBron leaves a team, they go to the lottery. I think you kind of have to look at the team's mentality after the fact. Like you had said, you know, Jordan goes to play baseball, the Bulls get to 55 wins and the Eastern Conference semis without Jordan. But, I mean, you have to look at where the team's, like, mentality is, what they're geared towards. When LeBron left the Cavs in 2009 or 2010, they didn't have a roster built to contend. Like, you couldn't look at that roster, take LeBron away from it, and think, this is a fringe playoff
but,
team.
But know? That's the point, isn't it? Like, when you have LeBron on the team, you contend no matter what the roster looks like. That's what I'm saying, because I mean, it's just a fact. The Cavs went from finals in 2018 to the lottery the next year. They won 19 games.
I think that's true to an extent, but I also think that, again, what I was talking about with level of competition in the Eastern Conference, I think it makes it, while it's still incredibly impressive that he made the finals in 2007, you have to look at his first season with the Lakers the previous year. I mean, obviously, it was a jumbled together group of players, no team chemistry, injury to LeBron halfway through the season. But, I mean, even if that team had squeaked into the playoffs, they probably weren't getting past the first round, and LeBron is obviously still in his prime.
I don't know if you can say it like definitively just because you may be right, just because every team he's been on has been to the finals other than that team, and that's the one year he got hurt. Look, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the back and forth. I just think it's when I point out the 55 wins and I point out the finals to the lottery things, it's just simply a matter of fact. That's not even, you know, it's part of the argument, but it's a matter of fact that those things have happened. How about Cal in Buffalo? Cal, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Cal?
Hey, love the show, Robin. How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to clarify something about this Brady being the GOAT no matter what. So your criteria is what? Because he's won the most championships? That's why he's the greatest of all time?
Well, it's not a personal even opinion. I mean, Tom Brady is really like the consensus GOAT, right? Like if you're on Family Feud and the question is who's the greatest quarterback of all time, the number one answer on the board is going to be Brady. And if the case would be yes, the winning, obviously, the longevity, the fact that he's still playing, and the statistical, you know, once he got Randy Moss, the things changed a little bit and he started to put up the numbers that put him in that comparison. So I think if you look at statistical achievements, I think if you look at longevity, and I think if you look at winning, Brady has a case across the board.
Okay, well, my counterargument to that is that you were talking about how LeBron James didn't have a lot of people around him, and that's why he didn't win a lot of the times when he was in the finals. And under the same exact argument against Brady is that he never went against a Belichick defense. I mean, you look at when they won their first Super Bowl, I think it was 36 against the greatest show on turf, and they held them to 17 points. I mean, he only had to put up 20 points.
Sure, sure. Look, that's the argument against Brady is that he played with the Patriots system. He played in that Patriots infrastructure. He played with great defenses.
But you take Peyton Manning? I mean, honestly, I mean, Peyton Manning, like, even Elway, because he took so many teams to the Super Bowl in his prime, they couldn't win it. And then when he's over the hill, he wins two more when he finally got a defense and a running game. It's like, and Elway, I mean, more mobile, stronger arm, and nobody was more prepared to play quarterback than Peyton Manning. I mean, neither of them had to go against those Belichick's defense. It's just, there's just no way anybody, I mean, that actually thinks outside the box, that, you know, that it doesn't conform to everybody else's thing.
Well, it's not really about conforming. Look, I understand what you're saying. I think it's a little flawed to bring LeBron into it because LeBron was in the finals every single year. These other guys that you're saying were not in the finals every single year. LeBron has four championships. These other guys you're saying don't have that sort of comparative hardware either. Like, so he's not a good example to use. If you just want to make the case based on the merits of those individuals, I understand what you're saying. I do. I said this earlier in the show. I think Brady is the consensus greatest of all time, and especially that happened after the win against the Falcons in the Super Bowl. But more and more, and maybe it's because he went to Tampa and people can just are looking at him in a different way, both literally and figuratively, I think you're starting to see the people who would just concede that Brady was the greatest of all time rethink it a little bit and have more courage in their convictions when they say they don't honestly believe that he's the best. And they're now starting to articulate cases for others. I'm not saying it can't be heard. I'm saying I still have to lean Tom Brady when you factor everything else in. But I'm also saying Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback I've ever seen. You know, so he can't be the greatest yet because he just doesn't have the career resume. But do I believe Patrick Mahomes is better than Tom Brady? Yeah, I do. Or better than Tom Brady ever was? Yeah, I do. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. At Robin Lundberg on Twitter. We don't know how much of a success Le'Veon Bell will be in Kansas City. We know he was not successful with the New York Jets. But how successful was his departure from the Pittsburgh Steelers financially? I mean, that, you know, in the grand scheme of his career and how he's viewed, I don't know how much that actually matters, but it certainly matters to his direct deposit. And I'll give you an answer to that coming up next. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show on CBS Sports Radio.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. I want to get into a couple business angles with two big names in football, Le'Veon Bell and Dak Prescott, and who better to do that with than Andrew Brandt, columnist for the MMQB Business of Sports podcast. And Andrew, you know, when it comes to Le'Veon Bell, we know his tenure with the Jets was a failure. You know, maybe through no fault of his own. A lot of tenures with the Jets are failures. It remains to be seen how much of a success it will be when he plays for Kansas City. But financially, because there was so much made about his contract situation when it ended with Pittsburgh, how do you evaluate how things turned out for Le'Veon Bell post-Steelers and currently with Kansas City?
Yeah, good morning, Robin. It was 2 years ago that I kept scratching my head every week that Le'Veon Bell hadn't signed with the Steelers and was forfeiting, I think it was $760,000 every week, and gave up $14 million to essentially get $14 million from the Jets at least the next year. So between 2018 and 2019, he was made whole back to zero. And then, of course, he's got a guarantee this year, which only lasted a few games for him. Obviously, it was a signing that the Jets regretted. You have a new general manager with the Jets. He was brought in by the old general manager. There seemed to be no connection between the coach and the player, even from the beginning. And it was a bad decision, compounded with a bad contract, because my people were telling me Le'Veon Bell had no market 2 years ago, except for the Jets. And here we are. So he signs a minimum deal with the Chiefs, which tells me, he had no market value beyond that. Maybe he had other teams wanting to give him a minimum deal. And the Jets are on the hook for the balance of that, up to $6 million. So the Jets are paying him to play for the Chiefs a lot more than the Chiefs are paying him to play for the Chiefs. And that's where we are.
When it comes to running backs, because we know, you know, even if you're a great running back, a lot of times the what people are willing to go to is not where you think your value is, because of that being a position that's viewed as easy to replace. I mean, Christian McCaffrey just got paid a lot. Would you say that it is, on running backs, if they have an offer on the table like the Steelers were giving them, especially if it's their own team, like, get it while you can? Because otherwise, you know, it might not be there later?
I think you have to say that. And, you know, Le'Veon Bell was at a time, it doesn't seem like long ago, and it wasn't, where the running back market was a wasteland. I mean, basically you had his franchise tag number and nothing else. I mean, I think the second highest paid running back was like Jared McKinnon on a free agent deal. And now we've had a breakthrough with McCaffrey and Henry and Mixon and Cook and Kamara. So, yeah, I mean, the earlier you can get a deal, the better. The interesting thing, Robin, is his rationale, at least he didn't really talk a lot, but for sitting out with the Steelers was to create a better market value the next year because of lack of usage, and he wouldn't have 300 touches and he'd be preserved. And as I said, there were no suitors beyond the Jets. So it just seems like you get to a point in your career as a running back and you're kind of seen as, you know, we can get cheaper options. It's really a tough position for market value.
Now, shift gears to Dak Prescott for a second here.
I mean, I
think when he went down, we all felt bad, obviously, because one, just it's a devastating injury. But two, I think because his contract stalemate with Dallas was such a high profile situation, and Dak bet on himself there, and he's an excellent quarterback, and quarterbacks get highly compensated. You know, from your point of view, when you're looking at his future now, how do you think that impacts not only where he plays, but you know, the kind of contract he might play on?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about Dak and not taking a deal early on. We don't know what the Cowboys' offer was. My sense, Robin, is seeing that Mahomes' long-term deal, you know, we talked about Mahomes. I have some issues with that deal from the player side. Seeing some of these other deals the Cowboys have given out, like Tyron Smith, like eight-year deals, that's probably something the Cowboys wanted and probably something Prescott didn't. He wanted to create optionality later in his career to get more deals. So everyone focuses on, was it 35 a year? Was it 38 a year? I just think the structure is important. So he turns it down, and he has this devastating injury. But I've been talking about this week on a lot of shows and writing that I don't think it hurts his market value at all. I really don't. Because assuming he's recovered, and I think we assume that, he will have the same options with the Cowboys in February that he had last February. One, sign a deal that he can agree to, which he didn't do last year. Two, franchise tag, which would be $37 million, which would make his earnings $68 million over 2 years. For comparison, Mahomes is $63 million over 3 years. Or they can set him free into the market where you know he'll get a bigger deal than that, no matter how good his ankle is, because you never see quarterbacks like Dak Prescott get to market. So I think he's fine. I think he's fine. I think he's in a good shape. His rehab would seem to be through, you know, right around March or February.
Robin Lundberg talking to Andrew Brandt, columnist for the MMQB, host of Business and Sports Podcast here on CBS Sports Radio. Real quick, not to revisit something that's old news, but because you said you had some issues with Patrick Mahomes' contract on the player side, I'm just curious, would you have advised him not to take that deal?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, to turn down that much money is a hard thing. I think that's, you know, the dilemma you go through. But the Chiefs were able to get their best player for basically his whole career, and the first 5 years are modest. You know, they're modest. Like I said, $63 million over 3 years. Ryan Tannehill just did a deal, $91 million over 3 years. And then he makes about $180 million over the 6 years. So that's a $30 million average, which is, I know it sounds like a lot of money, but that's already been passed by. So, yes, the latter 5 years of the deal, it jumps into the 40s. What a great deal. But, yes, I would have preferred a shorter deal for Pat Mahomes. But you ask a tough question. Can you turn down that money? That's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, especially, I mean, is there anything to, like, from the agent side of things, obviously, you know, you want to negotiate and fine-tune all that stuff. But when that deal comes out and it's, like, record-breaking, even if it may actually sneakily be team-friendly, you know, is there something to closing a deal like that, that the headline is going to say record-breaking deal?
Yeah, I mean, you just picked up one of the tricks that management has, which I used in Green Bay for 10 years, Robin. You know, it's like, can I call Adam Schefter and give him these numbers? I'm like, sure. You know, it's like, that's what the deal, the unspoken words are with these contracts sometimes, where you get the puff number out there and 98% of the population doesn't drill down like I do. And they think, oh my God, like with Mahomes, the $500 million number. So I get it. You know, this is the world out there where, you know, we're in the headlines and clickbait. But you look further, some of these deals are a lot better than others.
Andrew, appreciate the time this morning as always, and thanks for the insight.
Always a pleasure, Robin.
Miss any of the show? Catch up with the Robin Lundberg podcast, available all week on the weekend page at cbssportsradio.com.
Yes. What he said. If you missed any of the show, if you missed, you know, whether people still hate the Astros, if you missed whether Aaron Rodgers belongs in the same class as Tom Brady historically, or if you missed my only problem with the Jordan LeBron debate, you can catch up via the podcast, or you can catch up with me now at 855-212-4227, like Mitch in New Jersey is doing. Mitch, you're on the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
Good morning, Robin. I hope everything's good.
Everything is good with me, man. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Hanging in there. More good than bad, so you can't complain.
All right.
You woke up. You wake up another day. That's a blessing, as they say. First, I guess objectively, I guess you got to put Tom Brady. But Dan Marino and John Elway, they were my favorites. And the Dodgers' offense seems to copy them in the postseason, except for Elway's last 2 years, just like where is this offense? I mean, good hitting beats good pitching. They woke up. I mean, other than a few games, my Dodgers have really have an edge in my seat. And I know I think LeBron's the second best of all time. He can play multiple positions. I'm very unselfish. And the shot is not as smooth. But what I'm hearing, I think the Lakers need a point guard, just like the Clippers. And any truth to
well, LeBron's their point guard.
He should play center, and he would be the best. He'd be the best center too. But any truth to the rumor that Giannis might pull himself out and want to be with Dallas? Now that would be taking a page out of a LeBron's book, building a super team, and that would be some team with the Luka, fellow from the Knicks, and Giannis. That would be an awesome team. What do you think? And thanks for taking my call.
Well, look, as far as where Giannis winds up, fellow from the Knicks, you mean Kristaps Porzingis, there's a lot of teams that are interested in Giannis. And Miami is a team you're going to hear mentioned. Golden State is a team you're going to hear mentioned. Dallas is a team you're going to hear mentioned. But basically every team is a team you are going to hear mentioned when it comes to Giannis. First, I have to know for sure he wants to leave Milwaukee. And then we have to get to who has the best trade packages. And then we have to get to whether Milwaukee wants to keep him through the rest of the season and he hits free agency before we determine where he winds up. I think, you know, this offseason, you're more likely to see Chris Paul move, Russell Westbrook move, stuff like that. But Giannis is clearly the next marquee prize on the landscape. Let's go to Richard in North Carolina. Richard, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Robin. Listen to you every Saturday or just about. And really appreciate your love and knowledge for the NBA.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do have love and knowledge for the NBA.
I would. And one of the great ironies of all time, seems to me that the greatest player of all time, Kareem, is hardly ever mentioned in the debate. I'd like to throw out a few things in his defense. Not that he's.
Let me ask you, how old are you, sir? Just out of curiosity.
68.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, and I'm going to let you make your defense of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar because he deserves it. I think part of that is age, right? So, like, you know, you have to have been of a certain age to watch him, and unfortunately, over time, you know, people latch onto their era. Two, I think it's because Michael Jordan so defined the NBA that it's sort of like he became the face of the NBA once he came in. And then three, I think the big men sort of get separated a little bit. But go ahead, make your plea for Kareem.
Well, I told you you were very knowledgeable. Probably the greatest high school player of all time. As a freshman, his freshman team defeated the two-time national defending UCLA champions, since as a freshman he wasn't eligible for college competition or for big time, 75-60 in a scrimmage game. As a player at UCLA, he went 88-2 in three seasons, three straight national championships, three straight college player of the year. Second year in the NBA, won the title, taking the Bucks from nothing to the top. Greatest scorer of all time. Those who saw the 79-80 championship series, in which Magic got the MVP for that 42-15-8 game in Game 6, saw the greatest player of all time, Kareem, at his height in the first five games of that. I don't know if – I think that was probably his, 11th or 12th year in the NBA. So, greatest player of all time, in my opinion, certainly on the Mount Rushmore, and feel like he doesn't get the credit he deserves.
He definitely deserves to be on the Mount Rushmore. Can I ask you one question? If LeBron and when, assuming LeBron passes him in the all-time scoring column, does that do anything for you?
Well, that's a good question. We'll see what happens when that happens. But certainly if those three are on the Mount Rushmore, it would be interesting to see who got the most votes for number four. Who would, in your opinion?
I think you have to look at let me first classify who I think is even in consideration, right? And then that'll help me narrow it down. I think you have to look at Wilt, you have to look at Russell, you have to look at Bird, you have to look at Magic, you have to look at Kobe, Duncan, Shaq. You know what I think it would be, to be honest with you? Because that's tough. It's tough to choose between all, because Kobe's death, I think, makes it hard to make arguments against him at the moment. And Bird and Magic, the problem with them is they're always put together, right? Like, do you pick one of them versus the other? I think what and this is a avoidance tactic on my part. I think you leave that fourth spot open, perhaps for whoever emerges as the, you know, the next guy to put a stranglehold on the league. I think that's who gets that spot, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe if I had to pick one of those guys right now, who would you go with, Anthony? Kobe? Is it Magic? Is it Bird? Is it Duncan? Is it
I'd
Shaq?
Probably say Magic.
All right. But time to get to every topic I have not as of yet in another one.
It's time for another edition of Another One on the Robin Lundberg Show. The rumors, reports, and ridiculous from the week that was. Here's Robin Lundberg.
What is up first?
All right, so Jerry Jones is looking towards the future, and when Dak Prescott does get back on the field, the Cowboys owner has a request. Less running. He told 105.3 The Fan this week that he wants the coaches to be more mindful of how much running Prescott has to do, precisely because of the injury risk to his quarterback. Is Jerry Jones overreacting?
I think a little bit, to be honest with you, yeah. I mean, Dak Prescott has played, you know, a lot of football, and this is the kind of injury, you know, it's just one of those freak tough injuries. And remember Patrick Mahomes' injury last year? That happened on just like a random play, and he was lucky it wasn't worse because it looked ugly at the time. We see guys go down with non-contact injuries all the time. I think when it comes to the quarterbacks who take off and run, they have to run wisely and not recklessly. I think that's the case for everybody. But I don't, you know, my takeaway from the Dak Prescott thing, and I know everybody always wants to have like some grand reaction when something happens, is it's football. And that kind of thing happens in football. I've never really watched Prescott and thought he played recklessly. And I don't think that now. So, yeah, I do think it is a little bit of an overreaction from Jerry Jones. What's next?
Another one.
Daryl Morey stepped down after a 13-season tenure as the Houston Rockets general manager. Under Morey, the Rockets had the league's longest consecutive playoff appearance streak with 8. Houston advanced in the Western Conference playoffs in each of the past 4 years. Would you hire Daryl Morey to be your general manager?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, Daryl Morey gets disproportionate love because, like, NBA writers particularly love him, but he also deserves it. I mean, he's creative, he's innovative, and he's courageous. I mean, he's, you know, when the Warriors got Durant, you could figure everybody should pack up and give up, and he didn't. And his team, the Rockets, got as close as any team to beating the Super Warriors. I mean, the Raptors eventually did, but it not quite the same because Durant was hurt and Thompson was hurt. But the 73-win Warriors plus KD, there's only one team that ever got close to beating them in a series, and it was the Houston Rockets. Before he had Harden and everybody, he had competitive teams out there with Luis Scola and company. He evaluated Harden, and he said, that is somebody that's better than people realize, and got Harden there. He's wheeled and dealed and made trades. You know, the Chris Paul trade was a fairly brilliant move. The Russell Westbrook trade was not, but, you know, I don't know what happened to lead to that, whether with the Harden-Paul friction, whether Moriarty knew he was on his way out the door. But to answer the question, absolutely. I think I would hire Daryl Morey, and I would do so without any hesitation. What's next?
Another one.
So Tyronn Lue agreed to become the next head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers this week. What is one offseason move that the Clippers must make if they want to be playing in the finals next season?
I think they need another guard. People have talked about that. They need to bolster that. I think they need another big as well. But I think the biggest move that the Clippers can make is getting a voice. A unified voice. Is that Ty Lue? Maybe. You know, Ty Lue, I don't think gets enough credit for what he did with the Cavs. Now, people could point to his record without LeBron, which is not good, but the Cavs just without LeBron were not good. He challenged LeBron at halftime of Game 7. I thought he always had good game plans. He had good game plans against the Warriors, against the Celtics, teams like that. But the problem with the Clippers that went beyond their roster construction is Kawhi's just not really a natural leader. That's not Paul George's lane either. So I don't know if they had somebody that could bring that together. I mean, there's moves they can make on the margins. Again, kick the tires on who's available in the guard and big man market. But I think the biggest change the Clippers need to make is from a presence standpoint, because that team is not a team that should have let a 3-1 lead go. They had leads inside those games after 3-1, and to me, that's not about talent as much as it is about how the talent was brought together in the locker room. What's next?
Another one.
Finally, the long-anticipated sequel to Coming to America, the Eddie Murphy classic, we learned this week being sold by Paramount to Amazon Studios. So premiere date expected to be December 18th. What's your favorite movie sequel of all time?
Ooh, movie sequel of all time. Well, I'm going to separate the... Oh, man. Terminator 2 was awesome.
That it was.
Empire Strikes Back is the best of the Star Wars movies. I mean, Avengers movie sequels, Infinity War.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah, so there's a lot. I mean, there's more good sequels than get credit for. You hit me with these questions I need to think about, Anthony. Maybe I'll give you the full answer next week, but those are the ones off the top of my damn head. I'll be back at the same time and same place next week, 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on CBS Sports Radio. Ken Carman coming up next. It's been Robin Lundberg.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.